headlines, millions of Muslims mourn on Ashura, commemorating the historic Battle of Karbala and its message of resistance against injustice and tyranny. Truckloads of fuel arrives in Gaza hours after Islamic Jihad agrees to a ceasefire, ending 3 days of deadly Israeli airstrikes. Plus, the UN chief raises the alarm over the risk of nuclear confrontation on the anniversary of the first atomic bombing by the US nearly 8 decades ago. Hello and welcome, everybody. Our top story for this half hour: millions of mourners across Iran mark Ashura, the martyrdom anniversary of the Prophet Muhammad's grandson, Imam Hussein. Every year, black-clad mourners mark the occasion with processions or ceremonies to show their grief over the sufferings of Imam Hussein and his companions. Many also converge on religious centers such as mosques to commemorate the event. The rituals involve mourners beating on their chests and reciting elegies in honor of Imam Hussein, the third Shia Imam. Ashura is the 10th day of the Muslim calendar month of Muharram. It is the day when Imam Hussein and 72 of his companions were martyred in the plains of Karbala in modern-day Iraq. They were killed by forces of the tyrannical ruler of the time, Yazid, in the Battle of Karbala in 680 AD. Sayyid Mustafa Khushchesh is a political commentator based in Tehran. He told us about the philosophy of Ashura.
There are many across the globe who admire Hussein, and this is believed to be the most important day throughout the year, because it's not just a religious occasion. It's politics. It's everything. It's life. It shows how it sets an example for anyone. During the fights on the day of Ashura, Imam Hussein alayhi salam said to the opposite side that if you are not faithful, if you don't believe in God, at least be free men, free from, this has a lot of meaning, because freedom doesn't just mean freedom from tyranny, from, obedience to tyrant rulers, but freedom from money, from the lust for money, the lust for everything in life.
A convoy of fuel trucks has entered Gaza hours after the Palestinian Islamic Jihad agreed to ceasefire with Israel. The fuel was delivered through the southern crossing into the besieged territory. This comes after 3 days of Israeli airstrikes and retaliatory attacks by the Islamic Jihad. The fighting was triggered by an Israeli strike that assassinated a leader of the Palestinian resistance movement in Gaza on Friday. The Israeli aggression killed 45 Palestinians, including 15 children, and wounded 360 others. Well, here are the reactions of the people in Gaza to Israel's deadly airstrikes against the besieged territory.
The house was overcrowded with no less than 22 members, and around it there were 6 houses that were all damaged. And this happened without a warning. It was horrifying. They targeted the house with 5 or 6 rockets. There were body parts on the ground. It's horrifying.
They target people. They target helpless people who are safe in their homes. They target children and old people. They do not have mercy. Who can we complain to?
This building has 3 apartments, shops including smithy shop, aluminum shop, a carpenter shop, a fish store, chicken store. This is a tragedy. We appeal to the Arab countries and Muslims to stand with us.
3 days of Israeli aggression on the Gaza Strip has led to the deaths of dozens of people, including women and children. The atrocities came to halt after a truce was announced. The reasons for the Israeli aggression are now in focus with the regime, claiming its strikes were preemptive.
Gaza was flashed bright by explosions as Israeli artillery and other weapons targeted what they say were weapons factories and rocket launch sites belonging to the Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Following the latest round of aggression initiated by the Israeli military, an aerial duel was also held as rockets were fired from Gaza towards Israel, some intercepted by the Israeli Iron Dome anti-missile system, yet many penetrated deep inside Israel, reaching as far as Tel Aviv. Earlier, in a televised address, the Israeli Prime Minister said the regime had zero tolerance for attacks from Gaza and that isn't interested in a wider conflict in Gaza, but will not shy away from one either. Israel has labeled the latest round of aggression as a preemptive operation. It says it aimed to thwart alleged planned rocket attacks by the Islamic Jihad. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad called the initial Israeli bombardment a declaration of war, firing a barrage of at least 100 rockets into southern Israel. Around 13 people were taken to the hospital with minor injuries. Some reports have, however, indicated that many Israelis were killed in the retaliatory attacks. In response to the Israeli aggression, the Al-Quds brigades launched attacks on cities across the occupied territories. Hamas also announced its support for the Islamic Jihad and said it would respond to the strikes. Israel claims it targets military sites, but similar to all other attacks by the regime, civilians seem to be on the receiving end of the rockets.
Definitely, this is a war crime. It's a war crime in itself. The bombing in itself is a war crime. The siege of Gaza and the blockade for 15 years is a war crime. They're starving people, cutting off the electricity and cutting off the water supply and cutting off the ability for Palestinians to import much necessary food and building supplies and medicine and allow people to leave and come back is a war crime in itself. This is not acceptable. And that's one thing. The second aspect of it is that the fact that Israel has claimed and actually publicly announced that it is using this as a preemptive in itself is also a war crime, because even in international law of war, you are supposed to respond in a proportionate manner if you are being attacked. Actually, even this time, Israel itself admitted that there has been no provocation. Israel has been provoking again and again and again, and has been provoking the Palestinians in order to create a war with the Palestinians and in order to punish Palestinians again and again. So Palestinians have not done anything yet. And so Israel went and bombed and killed so many children, so many civilians, has destroyed again Gaza. This is apartheid. This is a crime against humanity.
Israel has continued its atrocities against Palestinians. Over the past years, the U.S. is particularly complicit in this, seeing its tacit support for Israel. During this latest episode, the U.S. urged all sides to avoid further escalation, but turning reality on its head, it added that the U.S., quote, absolutely fully supports Israel's right to defend itself. That's a green light to Israel to continue its bombing campaign.
The United States has time and again vowed to support Israel. This includes the U.S. President's latest trip to Israel, where he pledged full military support for Israel with regard to the Iron Dome, a new laser system, and other military support. And now regarding the latest round of attack against Gaza, the U.S. ambassador to the regime said Israel has a right to defend itself. That is a green light for Israel to continue with its rocket attacks. The U.K. Foreign Secretary also echoed similar remarks, adding that the kingdom stands by Israel.
Biden has continued support for Israel unconditionally. He repeated support for Israel and quote-unquote its security when it is not even threatened. It's the one that's threatening the security of the Palestinian people, including the children, women, elderly people, disabled, everybody. Israel is threatening the security. It's not the other way around. So for the United States to go around and for Joe Biden making so many promises during his campaign against Bush, against Trump, that he was going to roll back many of the aggressive actions of Trump, which were already before Trump, not really happily during Obama as well, and Joe Biden was his vice president. They were actually very problematic against the Palestinians. For Biden not to even reverse the steps, the aggressive steps that Trump has taken against the Palestinians, but to continue military aid, economic aid, collaboration with Israel, justification for Israel's attack on, it is giving a green light, and it is exactly the way we all understood it.
Those statements have, however, drawn criticism from the United Nations. The UN Special Reporter on the Occupied Palestinian Territories slammed the US for the remarks and stated that Israel cannot claim that it is defending itself in this conflict. She also condemned the regime's attacks as illegal and irresponsible. Meanwhile, the office of the Palestinian President called this week's attack a dangerous escalation. The regime's attacks was also followed by a closure of two border crossings with the Gaza Strip. But Palestine has witnessed such acts of aggression from time and again, and the heaviest price is always paid by the civilians. The Gaza Strip has been under an Israeli blockade since 2007. That is 15 years of a blockade. Israel has also waged many wars against the Gaza Strip and killed scores of Palestinians, yet there's no mention of this, while Russia's war in Ukraine takes center stage on a daily basis.
Well, up next is a new episode of Hashtag Trending, how social media reacted to the new Israeli bloodshed in the Gaza Strip.
Hey everyone, Ali Reza here, back with another Hashtag Trending. The Gaza Strip is bleeding once again. Israel unleashed 3 days of deadly airstrikes on the besieged enclave, leaving dozens of Palestinians dead, razing their homes, while the international community sat back and watched the brutal massacre. At least 44 Palestinians, mainly civilians, died in Israeli air raids. The carnage began when Israel killed a Palestinian resistance commander, prompting retaliation from the resistance fighters in Gaza. Israel later accepted an Egypt-mediated truce amid heavy rocket fire from Gaza. Social media pages were flooded with tragic videos and images of death, destruction, and agony in Gaza. Many slammed the global community for keeping silent in the face of Israeli crimes in what they described as double standard approach towards human rights. Moving on to our next comment by Purva Chitnis. They wrote, once again, the hypocrite world is exposed. No one cares about how Israel is carrying out attack on Gaza. Children are being killed, families getting destroyed, houses are demolished, but no outrage or solidarity by the world. Another video here posted by Chris. We were sleeping when they bombed us. Palestinian girl recounts the horror of Israeli occupation airstrikes. Hashtag Gaza under attack. The eyes don't lie. So as social media users especially took notice of the plight of the children, 8 kids were killed in the Israeli raids and dozens were injured. They say that the global community refuses to take any noticeable action against Israel, really any action for that matter, because the victims are Muslims, and if it were anywhere else, things would look different. Let's take a look at our next batch of comments. Fatina said, they are not numbers, they are kids. Do you know what's the meaning of kids? Each one of them has a story, a dream, and a hope. They just want to live in peace and to play in the ground because they're just children. This is the simplest right. Moving on to the next one, a video by Sarab Al-Rawashda. With all the fear in their voices, begging to make sure if their families are still alive. This is what the children and people of Gaza are forced to go through constantly, while the whole world shut their eyes willingly. Our next tweet by Muhammad Habib al-Rahman reads, stop calling it a conflict. It's Israel terrorism. There won't be an international intervention or any sanctions against Israel as the victims are Muslims. World leaders, remember you have to answer these children on the day of judgment. Hashtag Gaza under attack. Some, however, highlighted the greater evil, which is Israel's decades-long occupation of Palestine. They believe that the regime will keep up its atrocities as long as it is allowed to continue its occupation. Now let's take a look at our final batch of tweets. The next one comes from Professor Sheikh Sadiq. 75 years ago, Israel was not a country. Arab people gave place to Jews to live. Today, the people of Israel are killing the people of Palestine. And he shared a photo, Israel foundation date, in a Google search. Israel founded in 14th of May 1948. a very short history, but a very long list of crimes in that short period of time. Next tweet, the world must know what is happening in Gaza away from the false media that enhances the image of the occupation. The occupation is not oppressed, but rather a great danger to Palestine, and that's an understatement if I've ever heard one. So this is, in action, the U.S. and Western media trying to paint the occupation forces as the oppressed, but honestly, they're having a really hard time doing that nowadays. Our final tweet is by Noam Chomsky. A quote by Supporting Humanity was shared. It's almost impossible to think about. Gaza is 2 million people who are living in an open-air prison under constant attack.
It's almost impossible to think about. Gaza is 2 million people who are in the living in a prison, open-air prison, under constant attack.
And with that, we come to the end of another edition of Hashtag Trending. Thanks for staying tuned. Take care and bye-bye.
The United Nations Secretary General warns the world is facing the risk of a nuclear confrontation.
This is the moment when the risk of a nuclear confrontation is back, something that we have forgotten for decades. This is the moment, as I said, to ask the nuclear-armed countries to commit to the principle of non-first use.
Guterres says nuclear-armed countries must also commit themselves to not to threaten non-nuclear states with nuclear attacks. The UN chief says no one can accept the idea of a new nuclear war. Guterres made the comments in Tokyo after attending the ceremonies to mark the 77th anniversary of the U.S. nuke attacks on Hiroshima. Guterres also warned on Saturday that signals of a nuclear war are flashing red, noting that the only solution to the nuclear threat is not to have nuclear weapons at all.
Mournful is the earth as heaven starts to cry. Water doubts its worth as lips begin to dry. Listen to the silence. It breaks with a sad goodbye. Amid the drums of war is a mother's lullaby. Hussein, Hussein, Hussein. Hussein, Hussein, Hussein. Hussein, Hussein, Hussein. I cry for you in pain. I cry for you. I cry for you in pain.
closer, Iran.
Near the city of Abadan. Okay, I'll call you as soon as I arrive. Bye-bye. Well, I traveled from Tehran to the southern province of Khuzestan to the city of Abadan. You know, today is Ashura, the 10th of the morning month of Muharram, which marks the tragic martyrdom of Imam Hussein and his companions. I'm going to have a tour around Abadan in order to see the special rituals of Ashura in this city, which I have heard is very impressive. Stay with me. Millions of Muslims in Iran and other countries commemorate the 10th day of Muharram, which marks the tragic martyrdom of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, and his loyal companions. For Muslims, Ashura marks the climax of the remembrance of Muharram and commemorates the martyrdom of Hussein ibn Ali, the grandson of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, at the Battle of Karbala on Muharram 10th in the year 61 AH, corresponding to 680 CE. In Ashura, Iranian Muslims, along with others from around the world, in a sign of unity, come to the streets and mark the day and send a message to the world that they will not surrender to the oppression of any power, no matter how big it is. These rituals are very impressive in the southern province of Khuzestan. The people of this province usually hold mourning ceremonies of the month of Muharram at homes, mosques, Husseinias, and tekiyas. From the cities of Dizful, Shushtar, Behbahan, and Ram Hormuz to Ahvaz and Abadan in this province, the lovers of Imam Hussein show their love and devotion to him in the form of various programs. Arrived at Abadan. The ceremonies of Ashura have begun early in the morning. The entire city is full of big pieces of black cloth. And there are mukebs in every corner of the streets. Mukebs are tents erected along the way during the month of Muharram and Safar. These mukebs serve the mourners with cool water, tea, or food. Oh, a little boy wearing a black shirt and a green headband with the writing of Ya Hussein is coming toward me. Thank you. He brought me a glass of cool water. Salutations to Hussein, who was martyred while thirsty. Oh, over there is a huge crowd of people. Young and old are beating on their chests. In Khuzestan, there is an age-old tradition of a certain style of chest beating known as uniform chest beating or one chest beating. Uniform chest beating usually follows mourning ceremonies using cymbals and drums. In some streets, ta'ziyeh is performed reenacting the Battle of Karbala and the hardships suffered by Imam Hussein and his companions at the hands of the enemy forces. Oh, a big crowd of mourners have gathered here in order to watch ta'ziyeh. Let me get closer. It's very dramatic. A few meters away, Maqtalkhani ritual is being performed. In Maqtalkhani, the details of the tragic event of Ashura is described completely. Oh, everyone is shedding tears as the scenes of Ashura come in front of everyone's eyes. I was wondering that the love for Hussein never dies. It's like an inextinguishable fire in the heart of all freedom-seeking people of the world. Now it's time for the noon prayers of Ashura.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Now let's listen to the speech of Sheikh Jafar Jafar.
I begin in the name of Allah, the most kind, the most merciful. It's due to that kindness and mercy that we have these opportunities where we gather in remembrance and glorification of Him, Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. We then send our condolences to our 12th and living Imam, Al-Hujja, Ajjalallahu Ta'ala, Farajahu Sharif, and to each and every one of you, as we gather on this evening and on these nights to commemorate the tragedy that befell upon the household of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. You know, when we gather for the last 10 nights, and we do the masayib every night of companions, we do the masayib every night of family, sometimes we have to put it into perspective that it all happened on one day. It was all had to be endured in one day. We have time to deal with it. There was no time for the Imam to deal with it. The Imam had to be in it. There came a time when Imam was all alone. He called out, Hal min dabin yadubbu an harami Rasulillah. Is there anyone to come and defend the family of Rasulullah? Hal min muwahidin yakhafu Allahu fina. Is there not anyone who believes in Allah that will come to our defense? Al min mughithin yarju Allah bi ghathatina. Is there not any rescuer that will come and rescue us? When the shouts and the cries of the Imam alayhi salam were heard, it is said in Maqtal al-Husayn that at this time one man came out. One man, Sajjad, comes out of his tent. Umme Kulthum says, better come back. My son, come back. You are in no condition. Sajjad was so weak, the narration says, that he could not even hold a sword. But he says, my Imam has called me. My Imam has called me. How can I not answer the call of my Imam? Hussein says, O Umme Kulthum, take Sajjad back. For if we lose him, there will be no successor to the heir of Rasulullah. And then the Imam goes towards the Khaymah. Why? To bid farewell to the ladies and children. You know, it is this gham of the widas that breaks my heart every time. What must Zainab be thinking at this time? She knows that every time someone comes for wida, they don't come back. What does Sakina think at this time? That this is my baba, he's going now. And my chacha left, he never came back. My brothers left, they never came back. Imam comes into his khaymah, his tent, and he asks for his oldest clothes. And then he is given his oldest clothes. And then he makes holes in these clothes. We say, what do you plan on doing, Yabna Rasulullah? The Imam knows that these enemies, these mal'uneen, will not leave his body alone afterwards. So in hopes that he wears these old garments, maybe they will leave him covered. But Yabna Rasulullah, they did not. Yabna Rasulullah, they had no shame in what they did. The Imam alayhi salam then goes into the tent of Sajjad to bid him farewell. The narration says that the Imam bequeathed him, left him his wasiya. But I tell you, my heart asks me, my mind asks me, that when Sajjad looks at his father, he sees him bloodied. He sees him alone. He sees the thirst on his lips. I wonder if Sajjad asked, Baba, where is my uncle Abbas? Oh, my uncle, where is my brother Ali ibn al-Akbar? Where is my brother Qasim? Why are you in this state? But alas, the Imam alayhi salam is alone. And then the Imam comes out after having bid farewell to Sajjad. He comes out on the tents of the family in Abbas al-Qummi. Sheikh Abbas al-Qummi says, he cries out, Oh Sakina! Oh Fatima! Oh Zainab! Oh Umm Kulthum! Alaykunna minni salam! Upon you is my final salam! It is mentioned in Al-Manaqib that at that point Sakina rushes out to Imam Al-Hussein. She hugs Imam Al-Hussein. Imam Al-Hussein hugs her towards his chest and then he recites some poetry. He says, سَيَطُولُ بَعْدِي يَا سُكَيْنَةُ فَعْلَمِي مِنْكِ الْبُكَاءُ إِذَا الْحِمَامُ دَهَانِي. He says, Sakina, after me, they will make you cry for a long time, Sakina. But oh Sakina, have mercy on your father. Do not cry while he is still alive, for your cries break the heart of your father. Sakina and Imam embrace one another. The Imam alayhi salam now begins to get onto his horse. But he hears a familiar voice from behind. It is said that the voice was that of Zainab saying, Mahlan ya akhi. Wait one moment, oh my brother. يوقف حتى أزود من نظري. Let me look at you one more time, O Hussein. Because the next time I see you, your head will be removed from your body. The next time I see you, your body will be trampled. Let me look at you one more time, O Hussein. Once the Imam decides to go, it is his turn. The narrators mentioned that we were surprised at the way Hussein was attacking. This was a man who was thirsty. This was a man since morning had been going to the battlefield and back. He had been bruised and hurt. Yet Hussein attacked like a raging lion. Anyone that would come in front of him, Hussein would send him to Jahannam. Anytime someone would dare come in front, Imam would handle that. Umar ibn Sa'ad knew that this was no way to finish Hussein. He called out 4,000 people to come and shoot arrows at Abu Abdullah. Arrows began to rain down upon the Imam alayhi salam. It is said in Maqtal, some struck his chest, some struck his throat. Imam al-Hussein kept resisting, kept fighting. At one point, it is said he saw Shimr Mal'un with his companions about to attack the tent of Hussein. Imam calls out to Umar ibn Sa'ad, Hey Umar! Have some shame. Hussein is still alive. If you do not fear Allah, then be free men in this world. They retreat back. And now Imam al-Hussein continues, but there comes a point when Hussein is exhausted. It is that Imam stops on his horse. And his Imam is paused. It is said, a mal'oon took a rock and threw the rock at the forehead of Imam. It said, it hit the Imam with such force that blood began to fall on the face of the Imam. This is that same forehead Rasulullah used to kiss. This is that same forehead Ali and Fatima used to kiss. Blood began to trickle down the face, spill down on the face of Hussein. The narration says Hussein took his abba, took his shirt and raised it to wipe the blood from his face. At that time, an arrow with poison hit the chest of Abba. Hussein alayhi salam falls to the ground. The details are heartbreaking. There comes a man who stabs him with a spear on his collar. He removes that spear, stabs Hussein on the chest. Imam falls to the ground. Imam is laid on the ground. At this time, the mal'oon Shimmer calls out, "What are you waiting for? Finish Hussein." But no one came forward except for Shimmer. My brothers and sisters, I do not have the strength to tell you what happens next, but Sahib al-Zaman tells us in Ziyarat al-Naiya, "Wal Shimru jalisun ala sadrik."
اللهم اجعل محياي محيا محمد وآل محمد ومماتي ممات محمد وآل محمد. To Allah, whenever I face troubles in my life, I close my eyes and see your shrine and call the back every time. Oh, Hussein, you're the love of my heart. You are the light of my eyes. I swear to Allah, until my last breath, I will remember Hussein.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The limelight.
The scars of the U.S. invasions and occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan are deep, spanning decades. We will never know how many millions were killed or injured. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written jointly by Amy Goodman and Dennis Moynihan Writers. This article is published under the heading "The Other Victims of U.S. Burns Pitts War, the Iraqi and Afghan People." Stay tuned for more. Military veterans and their supporters camped out in front of the U.S. Capitol for close to a week after Republican senators withdrew their support for a major expansion of health care for veterans exposed to toxic burn pits in Iraq and Afghanistan. Formerly titled the Sergeant First Class Heath Robinson Honoring Our Promise to Address Comprehensive Toxics Act of 2022, the PACT Act targets the Pentagon's reliance on burn pits for disposing of the vast amounts of waste produced during the invasions and occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan. Plumes of polluted smoke and particulates from the burn pits injured up to an estimated 3.5 million U.S. service members over the past two decades. After blocking the bill, Senate Republicans faced withering criticism from veterans and their supporters, including renowned comedian Jon Stewart. I'm not sure I've ever seen a situation where people who have already given so much had to fight so hard to get so little, said Stewart, deadly serious, flanked by vets and families of veterans who died from the exposure. Earlier, Stewart assailed the Republicans. Ain't this America heroes who fought in our wars outside, sweating with oxygen, battling all kinds of ailments, while these people sit in their air conditioning, walled off from any of it. They don't have to hear it. They don't have to see it, he said. Stewart wept after the Senate finally passed the bill. Burn pits were used to dispose of everything from trash, tires, paints, and other volatile organic solvents, batteries, unexploded ordnance, petroleum products, plastics, and medical waste, including body parts. These constantly burning dumps were often sited adjacent to barracks. Little or no protective gear was provided for impacted soldiers. Purdue University anthropology professor Kaylee Rubai said on Democracy Now! NewsHour, burn pits are massive incineration fields, sometimes as big as football fields, but there were many smaller ones throughout Iraq and Afghanistan as well. The Department of Veterans Affairs has identified a slew of cancers related to burn pit exposure, along with skin problems, asthma, bronchitis, respiratory, pulmonary, and cardiovascular problems, migraines, and other neurological conditions. These illnesses could have been prevented. The military typically used jet or diesel fuel to burn everything, creating far more pollution than high-temperature incinerators. But using incinerators would have cost more money. Waste disposal was handled by the military contractor Kellogg, Brown & Root, or KBR, a subsidiary of Halliburton. Halliburton's CEO prior to 2001 was Dick Cheney. Cheney then became U.S. vice president and was a key architect of the invasions and occupations of Afghanistan and Iraq. KBR received no-bid contracts to handle an array of logistics for the wars, including waste disposal. KBR chose cheap and dirty burn pits, maximizing profits. War is a racket, retired U.S. Marine Major General Smelly Butler wrote in 1935. Butler was a career Marine, admitting in a 1931 speech, "I spent most of my time being a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street and the bankers," Butler said. "I am a racketeer, a gangster for capitalism." The close to $700 billion appropriated in the PACT Act for the next 10 years will help alleviate some suffering caused by Halliburton's war profiteering, but only for U.S. victims. It won't do a thing for the people in Iraq and Afghanistan. Veterans saw acute short-term exposure to burn pits at peak health at the prime of their lives. Kelly Rubai, who recently returned from the heavily war-impacted Iraqi city of Fallujah, said, "Iraqis face long-term diffuse exposure at all stages of the life course, so the health effects were varied and widespread. Living near U.S. bases in Iraq and therefore near burn pits increased the likelihood of giving birth to a child with a birth defect or of getting cancer. Burn pits are not the biggest figure of environmental and health harm for Iraqis," Professor Rubai elaborated, adding, They have also been facing military occupation, bombings, shootings, displacements, and layers of military incursion by different occupation forces since the U.S. invasion. These things have all added to collapse in public infrastructure that would be used to contend with the health effects of burn pits, poor overall health, and damaged conditions for farming and fishing. She concluded, "There is one really great way to avoid war-related injury, which is to not go to war." The scars of the U.S. invasions and occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan are deep, spanning decades. We will never know how many millions were killed or injured. The United States bears responsibility and owes the survivors reparations, no less than has been pledged belatedly to U.S. veterans.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The leader's viewpoint on Imam Hussein's revolution and Ashura. The pain and suffering which Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his followers endured on the day of Ashura were too agonizing, and the harm which was inflicted was very serious. The life of Hussein ibn Ali alayhi salam is more valuable than everything in the world. The pure and sacred lives of those followers of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and the lives of those youth and those members of Imam Hussein's household are not comparable to the life of other people. The bodies were covered in blood and dirt. They made sacrifices and they laid down their lives. The households of the Holy Prophet ﷺ and Imam Ali ﷺ were imprisoned. Those events are very tragic and very different to tolerate. But what was achieved on the day of Ashura was so great and glorious that it made it easy for Imam Hussein alayhi salam, his followers, and his household to endure the sufferings. This has been narrated by prominent figures.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The Islamic Ummah should never forget the event of Ashura, which is a lesson and a source of guidance for us. Definitely Islam is alive because of the event of Ashura and the efforts of Hussein ibn Ali alayhi salam. And I am from Hussein. This narration means that Hussein alayhi salam continued the path of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and he continued to promote Islam after him. If it had not been for the event of Ashura, and if these great sacrifices had not been made in the history of Islam, this valuable experience and this practical lesson would not have been bestowed on the Islamic Ummah, and Islam would have definitely deviated from its path, as many religions before Islam did, and nothing would have remained from it. The greatness of Ashura is because of this. Had it not been for Ashura, had this great sacrifice not been made in the history of Islam, had this lesson not been taught and this experience not offered, Islam would have certainly suffered from deviation like the religions before Islam had suffered from, and nothing would have remained of the truth of Islam and its luminosity.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.